Now we're holding on Lamed Amud Beis at the bottom by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Nachri Shehilva as Yisrael al Chametzai. If a goy lent money to a yid on his chametz. Now what that means, we're going to end up explaining in the Gemara that what it means is that the goy lent the Jew money. The Jew took some chametz and said, I'm going to use this as a mashkin. I'm going to leave this in your house, Mr. Goy. And if I don't pay back the debt, then this chametz is going to become yours. So then that chametz is mutter b'hanah after Pesach, because so Rashi says the idea is that since the time came for the payment of the loan and the yid didn't pay back, and the chametz is actually in the possession of the goy right now, so it comes out l'mafreya that it was the goy's all along. This is a point we're going to be discussing a little bit in the Gemara before we actually reach that point. There is, by the way, within that there's machlokas Rishonim. Are we talking about that it has to be that the time, this was in Rambam Perek Echad a few days ago, about whether we're talking about that the date for the payment of the loan, that the date for the payment only fell due after Pesach, or are we talking about that even where the date fell due before Pesach, that the dinim in our Mishnah would apply? The Rambam and the Ravid, among others, disagree about that. Then the Mishnah continues, V'Yisrael Shehilvas Nachri Al Chametzai. Then if it's the other way around, if the Jew lent the Goy money on his chametz, where again, the Goy is using his chametz as a mashkin and putting it in the Jew's house, and the time came and he didn't pay, Achar Pesach, also b'hanah, then after Pesach, that chametz is going to be also b'hanah, because then it comes out that since the Goy didn't end up paying the debt, it comes out that the chametz all along belonged to the Jew, and therefore it's chametz to Avol of Pesach, and therefore it's also b'hanah. As we learned previously about whether that Isur Hanah is Daraisa according to Rabbi Yehuda, or Dirabbanan as a Knas according to Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so the Gemara starts off Itmar. So we have a discussion of Amoraim that eventually we're going that on a different topic, which eventually involving Halva, which eventually is going to relate back to this din that we're talking about. Eventually we're going to relate it back to this din in our Mishnah. Bal Chayv, when you have a case of a Bal Chayv, a person lends money to someone, Reuven lends money to Shimon, he makes a shibud, if I don't pay you back by a certain date, then you can collect from my nechasim. So, and then the time came and he didn't pay up. So what's the deal with those nechasim? Abaya omar l'mafreya hu goyva, v'rova omar mikano l'abo hu goyva. Abaya says that it comes out when he collects property for it, it comes out that already retroactive to when he lent him the money, it comes out that already belonged to him. On the other hand, Rava says that no, it's only b'chazkase mikanu l'haba. We'll see in a little bit what the nafkamina of it is. Now, Rashi is not really specifying what the case is. I mean, you do have a regular case of shibud. Whenever Reuven borrows money from Shimon, automatically all of Reuven's karka, all of Reuven's land is meshubad, that he owns at the time, is meshubad to the debt, such that, as we're going to talk about later on, even if he sells it or gifts it or whatever, then Shimon is able to take it, is able to be toref, is able to collect it, to take it away from the people who bought it from him. So are we talking about that over here? We're just talking about a regular case of shibud. That's one way of learning, and from Rashi it seems that that's what we're talking about. There are a couple of different Rishonim that talk about different possibilities of that we could be talking about there was an apusiki over here. An apusiki is where you, to begin with, you decide the loiva and the malva, the loiva tells the malva, this part, I'm designating this particular piece of land or this particular thing of metaltalin or whatever, that it's going to be the way of paying off the debt. Within that itself, there's a couple of different kinds of aposiki. You have the regular kind where I'm designating this one, but if this one, let's say, is destroyed or whatever, then the malva is still going to be able to collect from another one, versus there's an aposiki which is tied davka to a particular object, where if that one becomes lost or damaged or what have you, then the malva has no recourse. So there's different opinions among Rishonim what exactly is the situation over here. Are we just talking about a regular case of shibud, Or are we talking about a specific case involving apusiki like that? Part of the issue is eventually we're going to be relating it back to our Mishnah and the discussion about chametz. Chametz is metaltlin. Usually metaltlin are not meshubad. Usually metaltlin are not meshubad to a loan. Later on, by the way, in the times of the Gaonim, it started being in the times of the Gemara and Ulier, most Jews own land. So therefore, you could have as a regular thing that when a person borrows money, then there's a shibud on their land. In the middle of the time of the Gaonim, that situation changed, and there wasn't really, you couldn't really depend on that that a person owns land anymore. At that point, the Gaonim made a takana that a person's metautlin can also be meshubad to a debt, and there's many different places in the Rambam where he deals with various ramifications of that din. But in any case, here we're talking Medina de Gemara, where a shibud is usually only on karka, but later on we're going to be relating this to the matter of chometz. So does that mean that maybe we're talking about over here where a specific apusiki arrangement was made that only this particular metaltlin should be reserved as the payment for the debt? Where again, either a regular apusiki where, okay, you know, you're able to collect from this one, but if this one gets destroyed, then there's a different one you'll be able to collect from. You're still going to be able to collect your debt somehow or other. Or is it lo yehelecha elahe menu? You're only going to be able to collect from this is the deal. And if this is gone, then there's nothing for you to collect from. Apusiki, yeah, means apoy to hei kayam. The debt will stand on here. Another possibility actually is that apusiki comes from a Greek word that means basically a mortgage. In some languages nowadays, they have the word for that. I think in French, for example, the word for mortgage is something similar to apusiki, apotheca or something like that. Yeah. Anyway, whatever it is. According to Rashi, though, it may be that none of this applies, and we're just talking about a regular shibud. Anyway, so Abaya is, whatever the case, Abaya is saying that it belongs to him retroactively from the time of the loan, and Rava says only as of when he collects it. So the Gemara explains, kol hecha de'aktish loiva v'zabin loiva. If we're talking about a case where in between the loiva was makdish the property or sold the property to somebody else, kulei amalei pligi de'osi malva v'tarif, everybody agrees, even Rava, who says that it was in the reshus of the loiva, but there was a shibud on it. Therefore, no question that the malva can come and take it away from hekdish from the buyers. So Reuven borrowed money from Shimon. Afterwards, Reuven took property and sold it to Levi. So now, if Reuven defaults on the debt, there's no question, this is the way the shibud works, is that Shimon is now able to go to Levi and take away the karka from him without having to pay Shimon anything. And similarly, now Levi may have recourse. We're going to talk about soon in the Gemara the concept of achrayus. So there may be when Levi bought the property to begin with, he might have realized what might be going on over here and arranged to get achrayus. Actually, there is a concept that really even if you don't write achrayus, it's automatically included. Whatever, but yeah. Anyway, we'll get to those points in a minute. But for the time being, the point is that Shimon the Malva is able to take away the property from Levi, the third party who bought it, without having to pay Levi anything. Now it's Levi's business to square things with Reuven. And similarly, v'osi malvo porik. Similarly, the malva, if Reuven had given the property to Hekdish, then Shimon will be able to go and redeem it from Hekdish without having to pay full value. Now, in the case of being Torif, he gets it for free. In the case of Hekdish, Rashi points out, he does have to pay a little bit because you don't want people to say Hekdish yotze b'loy pidya, and that people are going to think that Hekdish is just you can just treat it casually and just take it away without any pidyon at all. So he does need to pay something. Rashi, by the way, points out that now we have a concept that Rava himself says in other places in the Gemara that there are certain things that undo a shibud, even though usually a shibud is not something that you can easily cancel, but there are a few things, hektish chometz v'shichrur, that are, for example, exactly that. If I have something that I was meshabed to you and then I makdish it, then the hektish takes away the shibud. So how are we saying over here that not? Rashi says there's a difference between kedushas domim and kedushas Goof. We're talking about over there about kedushas haguf. If let's say, for example, Reuven borrowed money from Shimon and made a particular animal, let's say, as the apusiki for it. And then he was Makdish the animal, then Shimon has no ability to go and get that animal away from Hekdish because that animal now belongs to the Mizbeach. And then that takes away his Shibud. But over here, we're only talking Kedushas Damim. So over here, we're only talking Kedushas Damim. So therefore, yes, he's able to be poydet from Hekdish and exercise his Shibud. So that's what we're talking about. So again, according to Rashi, it seems we may not be making a distinction between Karka and Metaltlin over here. According to other Rishonim, we may be making a distinction between whether between a specific piece of land that was, or specific metaltlin, as the case may be, that was designated as the aposiki for this loan. Well, that's the point. In other words, so in a certain sense, it does belong to him, but in a certain sense, it doesn't because the malva has a shibud on it. Therefore, now the malva will be able to go to Levi and take it away from him, or to Hekdesh and pay a small amount, a dinner, and collect his debt. The tnan, as we learn in a mishnah, moisif oy dinner poydas and nechosim elu, that the malva can add one dinner and then he can be poydas these nechosim. Actually, Tosfos over there learns a little bit differently, that it means the loiva is obligated to borrow another dinner from somebody and go and be poydas the nechosim and give it to the malva. Whatever the point is, that the point is the malva is able to exercise his shibud. Even Rava is going to agree with that, because yes, even though the loiva still had a certain ownership of the property at this point, but it's not an exclusive ownership. There is a shibud for the malva, and therefore the malva is able to exercise that. So that's not the machlokes. The machlokes is kipligi dezabin malva v'kadish malva. The question would be, can the malva sell this property before the loan comes due? Or can he be makdish it? So now, in other words, so let's say, for example, so Reuven had borrowed money from Shimon. You have this karka which is under a shibud. Shimon doesn't say I'm being makdish the choiv. If he did, then obviously there's nothing to talk about. Once the choiv is paid, then it goes to hekdish. What he did is he was makdish the karka before he even has possession of it. Now, what happens is Reuven eventually doesn't pay off the loan and Shimon ends up taking the property. Can we say that his hekdesh was valid or not? Did he have any ownership of it at the time? Abaya omer l'mafreya hu goiva. So Abaya says, yes, what we're saying is his collection of it works l'mafreya in the sense that me'ikra b'rshusa habakoi. It was, to begin with, to a certain extent in his rishus, v'shapir akdesh v'shapir zabin. So therefore, he was validly able to be makdesh it or to sell it, because to a certain extent it belonged to him. V'rova omer mikanu l'abohu goiva. Whereas Rava says, no, he's only collecting from now on. In other words, only when he collects it, on the day that he collects it, does it become his? Kiven to Ilu Havale Zuzi, because after all, if Reuven had money that he could have paid off the debt, have a Masalik Lebezuzi, then he would have been able to pay it off with money, and then Shimon has no further claims on the property. Ishtakach, the Hashtag Hakoni, so it comes out that Shimon is only Koina the Karka right now, and therefore beforehand, he had no ability to sell it and be Makdish it. By the way, the Gemara is kind of skipping over the Rambam mentions in Hilchos Malva V'Loiva. It's a long, long process that's outlined in Masechta Erchin, and other places in Shas, how exactly Shimon ends up getting this property from Reuven. He has to first go to Beis Din and get his shtar validated, because otherwise Reuven can claim that it was forged, and he has to have evidence that it wasn't paid off, and then Beis Din has to go and see is there anything that we can collect from Reuven right now, and we have to see if there's anything we can collect from him right now, and then we see then we have to see what property he has or had, and then we have a whole thing of doing a shuma on it, etc. It's a long process, but the point is that eventually, if the process goes through to completion, Shimon is going to end up being the property of this field. So that is going to end up being the owner of this property, is going to end up being able to take this property. So therefore, Abaya says that goes all the way back to when he first took out the loan, and Rava says only as of now, when Beis Din gives him reshus to go and take the property. I mean, I guess also the property could be short. So I guess also to a certain extent. Well, no, if it was Nechosim B'nei Chorin, then the process could be short-circuited, because instead of having to go through that whole rigmarole, at some point, Reuven can say to Shimon, you know what, I can't pay, here, take my field. But here, where there are third parties involved, then obviously Reuven can't do that, and we do have to go through the whole process. Here, where Reuven sold it to Levi, it was Makdish it to Hekdish, then obviously you can't just say, you know what, take it, you need the whole process. Okay. So the question is, the Gemara says, Umi Omar Rava Hochi, did Rava really say that only mikanu lahabo, that mikanu lahabo goiva, that he only owns the property as of when he actually takes it over. Va'amar Rami Bachama, but we have a case where first Rami Bachama says, and then a few lines down, we're going to have Rava pointing out something regarding it, which we're going to see amounts to a contradiction with what Rava said before. So you have a case like this: Reuven Shemacha Sada L'Shimon Ba'Achrayus. So Reuven sold the field to Shimon with Achrayus. Now Achrayus is the kind of thing where Reuven is giving Shimon a sort of insurance. And if somebody who I owe money ever ends up taking this field away from you, then I will reimburse you for that. It's called Achrayus. The Gemara actually has a discussion in Bava Metzia and in some other places. What if Achrayus was not written in the Shtar? Do we say Achrayus Torah Sofer? Do we say it amounts to just that the Sofer made a mistake and nevertheless Achrayus is implicitly included, or is it not? In any case, It's in Shnayim Ochsin in particular, but in the first parak above Metzia. It's in a few other places in Chas also, I think. But the main place where it's discussed is in Bava Metzia. Anyway, the final decision is Achrayus Torah Sofer, that even if no Achrayus is written, it's as if it was written. So here you have it was with Achrayus. So either Achrayus was written explicitly or it wasn't written, as the case may be. Al pi halacha, then according to that opinion, which is accepted la halacha. The way to sell a field shaloi ba'achrayus, you'd actually have to explicitly write in the shtar, I'm selling you this field without achrayus. And then it means, as is, basically, yeah. And then it means Shimon knows that he's taking a risk that the Baal Choyv may come and take it away from him. Obviously, he gets a discount for that, right? Okay, so in this case, Reuven sold the field to Shimon with achrayus, which again means that if the field gets taken away from Shimon, then Reuven is reimbursing him. V'zok von olav b'milva. Now, what happened was Shimon didn't have enough money to buy the field to pay the full price. So he wrote out to Reuven a shtar that I owe you X amount of money. Zok von olav b'milva means that you turned it into a loan. In effect, what we're saying is, I bought this field from you, which is worth $1,000. I don't have the $1,000, so I'm writing a shtar that I owe you that you lent me $1,000. That's zok von olav b'milva. Then
the seller is lending the money.
In effect, the seller is lending the money to the buyer, right? Umes Reuven. Then what happened was Reuven died. Now Reuven's Baal Chayv comes and takes the field away from Shimon to pay the debt. Different Baal Chayv, right? Well, no. One second. Reuven over here is the Baal Chayv. Reuven here is the original owner. He's the Baal Chayv to Shimon right now. Keep in mind. Reuven sold the field to Shimon, but he, in effect, what he did is he said to Shimon, I'm lending you the money to buy this field. So right now, Shimon is the one who owes the money. But Reuven himself also has debts that he owes to other people. So now there's this karka that Reuven had sold to Shimon. So now the din is that Levi, who Reuven had previously borrowed money from, I know I probably should have said in the beginning with, I probably should have changed the names around to whatever. The point is Reuven had previously borrowed money from Levi. So now after Reuven dies, then Levi says, I never got paid my debt from Reuven. I'm coming to take away this field that Reuven sold to Shimon. Shimon, meanwhile, had not paid off the debt that he owes to Reuven. He still owes Reuven $1,000 for the field. All this time, he hadn't paid it off yet. So now what he does, but also Shimon, so Shimon says, you know what? Let me get together the $1,000. Let me go give it to Levi. And that way, I'll be able to keep the field that I have. Let's say, in other words, the value of the field, well, it has to actually be the value of the field is equal to the value of the chayv. Again, in that whole scenario that the Rambam describes, the exact details of how you go about being toter for field, part of the deal is that you have a shuma over there based in has to send an expert appraisers in order to figure out the value of the field. And then they figure out the whole field or this chunk of the field is worth X amount and that's equal to the value of the loan. So let's say to keep things simple over here, we're talking about that the field itself was worth $1,000 and Reuven's debt to Levi was also $1,000. So now Shimon says to himself, I want to be able to keep the field that I bought. So I will go and pay Levi the $1,000 that Reuven previously owed him. And that way I'll be able to keep my field. Now, because he has Achrayus, he wants to go, and now because he has Achrayus on the field, he wants to be able to go to Reuven's Yoshim and tell them, you know what, you have to compensate me. I paid off your father's loan, because otherwise the field would have been taken away from me. So therefore you have to reimburse me. Because after all, your father is the one who owed the money to Levi, not me. So Dinahu d'osu bnei Reuven v'amri le l'shimin. So the din is that even though Reuven had accepted Achrayus, nevertheless, the Yoshim of Reuven can come and tell Shimon, no, anan mitautli shovak avun gaboch, our father Reuven left you a debt of mois, of money, so you didn't have that, and that's mitautlin. Mitautlin of Yisoimim are not under a shibud to a balchoiv. You were only chayev money because you owed him the 1,000 for the field. So you shouldn't have given them to the Baal Chayv. So therefore, Bnei Reuven can tell Shimon, in effect, you had no right on our behalf to give the Baal Chayv to pay off our father's debt. You didn't have a right either to keep them because of Achrayus, because they're metautlim, and metautlim, if you saw him, that's why it's important in the story that Reuven died, because now we're talking about Yisoimim. Metaltlin of Yisoimim are not under a shibud to a balchoiv, only karka of Yisoimim. So therefore, they can tell him metaltlin the yasmi the balchoiv le mishtabi. Metaltlin of Yisoimim are not mishubud to a balchoiv. So therefore, they can tell Shimon, I'm sorry, they can tell Shimon, we're not obligated to give you anything. You went and decided to pay Levi. That's your problem. That's none of our business. If Levi had come directly to us and demanded repayment of the debt, then we would have told him, our metaltlin is not meshubad to you. The only thing that's available is the field that our father sold to you, Shimon. So fine, then in that case, he can go take the field. The fact that you decided to short circuit that by giving him the money, that's not our problem. Now, Tosfos points out a couple of details in the story over here, that If there was no Achrayus, then obviously Shimon is going to have to pay Reuven's heirs for the field. The chiddush is he's thinking that because there's Achrayus, then therefore it cancels each other out. I paid the debt, and now therefore you have to pay me in order to even things out. Because after all, there was Achrayus, and the point is that there is a concept when it comes to property of Yisoimim. There is a concept of Toifis Mechayim, that if a Baal Choyv has possession of the Metaltlin while the father was alive, then he's able to keep it. But so over here, you would think that it's Toifis Mechayim, but no, we don't say that, says Tosfos. The other point is that even though Shimon did pay Levi, he actually took out money and gave it to Levi, nevertheless, he can't say that, you know what, that cancels out the debt that I owe your father. So therefore, in other words, you should have to reimburse me, and I'll end up breaking even, and it comes out, in effect, that you paid Levi directly. They have the ability to say that we didn't have to do that. But now here comes V'omar Rabba, Epikeach Shimon. If Shimon is smart, then what is he going to do? In order to be able to get what he wants, Magbi Lahu Ara, he will tell them, okay, you know what? I don't have the money to pay back the loan that your father gave me. I have the karka, so I'll give the karka back to you. Vahodu Govi Lominaihu, and then he's able to collect it again from them because of the Achrayus. In other words, that the Yerusha that the father left them is not metaltlin, is not a debt of metaltlin of $1,000, but rather karka. And karka of Yisoimim can be mishubad, is still under a shibud. So therefore, Shimon can get what he wants after all.
Except there's a big difference.
Yeah, what's the difference?
The difference is he's doing a matana. Before it was a Kenyan.
What kind of matana over here? He's telling them, I'm sorry, I don't have the $1,000 to pay that Reuven, your father, lent me. So therefore, you can take back the karka. You can go through the whole Torah process, and you are going to end up taking this karka away from me. And as soon as they take it away from him, then he goes right back to Beis Din and says, you know what? So now their father left them karka. Their father owes me money because of the Achrayus. Money or karka. And therefore, he gets back either the money or the karka. And that works. The Omer of Nachman, Yisoimim should govu karka b'chayvus avihim, because Reb Nachman says exactly that. that if Yisoimim collected karka for a debt that was owed to their father, the din is Baal Chayv, Chayz of a Goy, V'Oysa Mehen. Then a Baal Chayv is able to come and take that karka away from them, because then the Yerusha was karka, and karka of Metaltlin is under a Shibud. So even though over here, the same one, the one from whom they collected the karka and the Baal Chayv to whom they owe the karka happen to be the same person, they happen to be both Shimon, that's neither here nor there. Therefore, Rava says, so that can work. Now that we have that shitta of Rava, now let's relate that back to the discussion before about the Mafreya who gove or Mikano la Abba who gove. That'll tell them that in turn, once we go through that, then we're going to relate it back to Chometz, right? So.
This is Shas
Katan. Yeah, there's a reason why Pesachim is called Shas Katan. Okay. So, e amet b'shleim l'mafreya hugoiva. Now, back to the machlokas Abaya and Rava about l'mafreya hugoiva or mikanu l'abba hugoiva. If you say like Abaya, l'mafreya hugoiva, amtu l'hochi, then therefore, choyza v'goiva oisamehen, then therefore we understand why Shimon is entitled to take back the karka from them after he used that karka to pay off the debt that he owed their father Reuben for the 1,000 that he couldn't afford when he was buying the field. Because we can say to command to govern mechayim davu and dami. Because in effect, it's as if they collected it while their father was alive. Because the mafreya who gove, when they collected, it's considered that it was theirs all the way from the time of the choiv. So it's considered in effect as though Reuven never sold it to Shimon. Or at least even if we say that he sold it to Shimon, fine. But at the moment that the choiv took effect and it comes out that Shimon in the end is defaulting on the choiv and can't pay, then the field is going back to Reuven's Yoshim, and it's considered as though all along, from when the loan was taken out, then it belonged to Reuven. So now we understand why. So now they yarshined karka from their father Reuven. Reuven owes Shimon money on the grounds of the Achrayus, therefore Shimon's entitled to collect it. Ela I amet mikanu l'abba hugoiva, but Rava is saying mikanu l'abba hugoiva. So how does it work? Amai chozev hugoiva oisamehen. Then on what grounds is he able to collect it from them? Hohabi commander zabin yasmi nichsi dami. Wouldn't it be like as if the Yisomim themselves bought karka, because the karka isn't considered to belong to them all along? It's as if now, after Reuven died, the Yisomim went and bought a new piece of karka. The ilu koni yasmi nichsi mikom eshtabli l'abba hugoiv, and such an achasim are not under a shibud to the Baal Chayv. So what do you mean your father yarshined you property and therefore I can collect from it because your father owed me money? Their father didn't yarshin them property according to Rava's shitta. It's in effect, they bought the property. They got title to the property now. Only when Reuven says, only when Shimon says, you know what, I'm sorry, I can't pay the $1,000 of Zuck for an Oliver Milva, take back the field. So then, in that case, how is he able to collect it from them again? At that point, it becomes nechasim that the Yisomim just got now, and the Yisomim that nechasim that Yisomim got just now are not under a shibud to their father's chayv. So if he gave 500 down and the other, same idea. In other words, the point is, so then we're talking about 500 instead of 1,000. So okay, it would be in half the field then. Yeah, same difference though. So the answer is shiny awesome. The difference is, in this case over here, you're right. In a regular case, Rava would say that he's only migoiva mikano l'abba, and therefore that wouldn't work. The reason why it works over here, da'amalahu, because Shimon can tell them, just as much as I had a shibud to your father to pay him the $1,000 that I couldn't owe for the field, in effect, I also have a shibud. I also have a shibud to your father's Baal Chayv, Levi, and this is midr Rab Nosson, based on what Rab Nosson says. How do we know that in a case like this, where Reuven owes Levi a mona, and in turn Shimon owes Reuven a mona, how do we know that we take the money directly from Shimon and give it to Levi? This concept is called in the Gemara Shibud de Rab Nosson, because it's the Shibud that Rab Nosson taught us from a pasuk. You give it to the one to the one to whom the keren belongs. Rashi explains from a good. The word Osham literally means guilty, but the point is Rashi explains based on a Gemara and Baba Kama that the word Osham also refers to the Keren, because you have the case at the end of Parashas Vayikra over there where a person denies a chayv and swears falsely on it, and he has to pay the Keren v'chaymesh and bring a korban. So the pasuk mentions that he has to bring the Osham, and that the pasuk mentions he has to bring an Osham, and besides that, it means besides beheshev as ashamay beroshay v'chamishisa yosef olav. So the word ashamay means the amount that he's guilty, meaning the actual amount of the choy. So we see therefore that the word Osham can refer to the Keren. So v'nosan l'asher osham loy, you have to give the choiv to the one to whom the keren belongs. In this case, that's what shibud de Rav Nosan is. Ultimately, the money is owned by Levi, because Shimon owes Reuven and Reuven owes Levi. So therefore, we take directly from Shimon and give to Levi, because he's the one who's supposed to have the money. He's the one to whom the keren belongs. In other words, it actually says if the pasuk had said l'asher hilvohu loy, then we wouldn't have shibud de Rav Nosan. Then we would just say that we take from Shimon and give to Reuven, and then it's Reuven's business to deal with Levi. One nafkamina of Shibud de Rav Nosan is right here in the sugya, because Shibud de Rav Nosan is what makes Rava's suggestion work. But there's other nafkaminas. Rashi in another place, for example, mentions that a nafkamina of Shibud de Rav Nosan in a more regular case is like this. You would think that suppose that Levi comes and takes Shimon to Beis Din and says, "Where's my money?" Can't Shimon say, "Wait a minute, I never borrowed money from you"? Lav bal dvorim didiat. Go to Reuven and digzich with him. No, shibud de Rav Nosan allows Levi to say, "No, Shimon, since you owe Reuven this amount, and Reuven in turn owes me this amount, then yes, you are my bal dover, and I have the right to take you to Beis Din over it. I don't have to deal with the middleman with Reuven, right?" Is there an official word for such a thing? I don't know. I mean, usually,
one in general, when you use a name, a word that has a meaning that's very unusual.
I don't know. That's what it is. It's a word that's
Alexander.
Being used. No. Yeah.
Alexander.
Yeah.
Does. If you look it up in a dictionary, it actually does mean
Karen. Just a second. No, if you look up Osham in a dictionary, it means guilt, and therefore it means a korban Osham. In this particular pasuk, since it uses the word veheshev as hashomay beroshay, and the end of the pasuk says lasher osham loy, so we understand, since the pasuk itself is saying that he gives his hashomay at its head, meaning at its value plus its chaimish, then we understand the word osham over there necessarily has to mean the keren. And then the next pasuk describes the actual korban osham he brings, and therefore, when the end of that pasuk says v'nosam asher osham loy, then it also means to the one to whom the keren ultimately belongs, which in this case is Levi. Yeah, what do you want to ask, Avraham Asher?
So, in that case, it could go indefinitely. I mean, Levi is also, if he's a barchov to someone else,
if Levi is a barchov to somebody else, then yes, it could keep on going like that. Yes, eventually you're going to have not everybody owes everybody else money.
No.
Maybe nowadays where everybody has mortgages and whatever, maybe. But back then, I don't know that necessarily. Eventually, the chain stops somewhere. Yeah. Actually,
but you can't. It can go beyond the beyond Levi.
Yeah, of course it could go beyond Levi. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so Tosfos mentions, actually, even so, we really only do the shibud de Rav Nosan when it comes to karka. When it comes to metaltlin, you still don't say that. Karka, at least you could say, because eventually, what would happen if we went through this whole scenario? Eventually, once there's a shibud, then eventually, after all, we just said at the beginning of the sugya that if Shimon at some point sells the karka or gifts it or whatever, then Levi has the ability to take it away. So therefore, to a certain extent, we can consider it as if it belongs to him now, and therefore we can say shibud de Rav Nosan works. Metaltlin, you can't really say that. Okay. Anyway, the point is that, so the two statements of Rava don't contradict each other, because yes, Rava is saying mikano l'abohu goiva, but in this particular case, on the grounds of shibud de Rav Nosan, it really doesn't make a difference. It, in effect, it's almost as if it amounts to that l'mafreyahu goiva. Because in any case, to begin with, there was a shibud, not only that Shimon had, not only that Shimon had on the property, but also that Levi has on the property. Because of the debt, because of the previous debt that Reuven owes Levi, which therefore Levi was going to take away the field from Shimon. And that's what Rav is saying, therefore, that what Shimon does is, what he does is he pays off his own debt by giving the field back to Reuven's heirs. Now, therefore, he's entitled to collect on the grounds of his achrayus. And therefore, so it comes out now So this is new metal. It is new karka that the Yisomim bought. But that's neither here nor there. Shibud did of Nassan allows us to consider as if all along it belonged to Levi. Okay. So now let's relate this back to our Mishnah. Tnan. So we learned in the Mishnah, Nachri Shehil versus Yisrael Achametz. So if a goy lends a Jew money on his chametz, so we said Achra Pesach Mutar B'Hana. So let's figure out what we're talking about, what the case we're talking about over here. Right now, the Gemara is assuming that it's just like a regular shibud. If I don't pay you by such and such a date, then you, the yid, will be entitled to come to my house and take the chametz. So, iyamet b'shleimel amafreyahu goiva. So if you say, like, abayel amafreyahu goiva, all along the chametz was, or sorry, it's the other way around. The goy lent money to the Jew. The Jew says, if I don't pay the debt by such and such a date, then you, Mr. Goy, can come to my house and take my chametz. So if we say l'mafreyahu goiva, then it comes out, to begin with, from the beginning of Pesach already, this chametz didn't belong to the yid because he borrowed the money before Pesach. Eventually, he defaults on the loan and the goy comes and takes the chametz. So it's considered as though it was the goy's chametz all along. Am tu lahochi, mutar b'hanah. Therefore, it's mutar b'hanah. Eli amet mikano l'habohu goiva. But if you say mikano l'habah, am I mutar b'hanah? Why is it mutar b'hanah? During Pesach itself, it still belonged to the yid. The Rishus of Yisrael have a koi, because after all, it was in the Rishus of the Yid. The answer is, yes, but the case we're talking about is that he actually placed the chametz by the goy. The word hirhin is also maloshin mashkin, but it means more than just a, it means, it, no, the word hirhin is maloshin mashkin. It's an expression used of a mashkin. So in other words, it's not just that he said that this is, it's not just that he said that there's a shibud on this. He actually made a mashkin out of it and put it in the goy's house, where if I don't pay by such and such a date, then you get to keep the mashkin. So that makes it. So even Rava will be fine with that and say, even Rava will say that that's considered the mafreya, that it's considered, as we're going to talk about soon, that the Baal Choyv is Koine Mashkin. No, Abaya is the one who said the mafreya. Rava says Mikano Abba. So even Rava, who says Mikano Abba, will agree that the case of a Mashkin is different because it's actually in the Malva's house. In modern law, I have no idea. Okay. I don't know. Well, yeah. Okay, fine. Well, if he sticks it in a tree or sticks it in a field, if he was masking it, then on the Raisa level, that helps him not to be over on Bal Yirah Bal Yimotze. But Midrabana needs to. If he puts it someplace where he can get a hold of, then he's still over on Bal Yirah Bal Yimotze. But over here, it's in the goy's possession. And so it's considered a mashkin. And as we're going to talk about on Omud Beis, the malva is koina mashkin to a certain extent. Therefore, that prevents it from being considered a chometz of the yid, and therefore it can be mutter. Now, one second. We said at the beginning that the whole concept of shibud usually only applies to karka, not to metaltlin. And so one possible way to understand again is where. So again, according to Rashi, maybe we could say the whole machlokas Abaya and Rava applied equally well to karka as to metaltlin. Again, you could say karka, there's an automatic shibud, and metaltlin, you would have to arrange that there was a shibud specifically on this. Otherwise, we would have to say that there was a specific shibud on the schometz. And Marsha actually draws a distinction that maybe only when it comes to dinim mamonis would Abaya say the mafreya who goiva. Maybe when it comes to iser of chometz, then he would hold that since the fact is he hasn't collected it yet, then mikano la'abo who goiva, and therefore you would have a problem unless he actually placed it in the goy's possession. Yeah, what?
What would be Rava's opinion if the goy tells him that he can come and you know, use it whenever he needs to, as long as he brings it back?
Rava's opinion if the goy comes and tells him he can use it whenever he needs to.
But the yid, yes.
To say, the preposterous. I guess the Yid would have to say, I can't do that. Thank you. Thank you for the offer, but I can't do that because it's Chometz's off limits to me doing Pesach. Yeah. Anyway. So
it's still considered. It's still considered the Yids, even though it isn't in Rosh Hashanah of the Goy.
I guess in that case it might indeed be considered the Yids Chometz. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says Lema Katanoi. Should we say that actually this machloikas of Abaya and Rava is the same as a machloikas Tanoi? Which, of course, you have the usual question: if the machloikas is the same as machloikas Tanoim, then why are the Amoraim repeating the argument? So we have a machloikas like this. Yisrael shehilvel and nachri al chametzoi. If a yid lends money to a goy and the goy uses his chametz as collateral, la'achra pesach ain over. So after Pesach, he's not over. Now Rashi over here makes a point that ain over does not. We're not talking about the issue of bal yirah bal yimotze. We're talking about the question of whether this is considered chametz over all of a Pesach. Because here we're talking about after Pesach. So after Pesach, you can't talk about whether he's over on Bal Yudah or Bal Yimotze. We're talking about whether it's considered Chometz Sh'over Olav HaPesach. So he's not over on that. Mishum Reb Meir Omru over. But they said in the name of Reb Meir that he is over, meaning that it would be Chometz Sh'over Olav HaPesach. So my love b'hokam miflegi. So wouldn't we say that's the machlokas? D'mar sovel amafreya hu goiver, umar sovel mikano labo hu goiver. So, the Tanakama who says ain it over would say that the goy used this chometz as collateral, but during Pesach itself, it's still considered. So one way of looking at it, if we say the mafreya who goyva means as of the beginning of Pesach it was already the yid's chometz, that would be Reb Meir, that therefore he would say over. Whereas if we say mekano lahabo goyva, only when the goy defaults on the loan, only then does it become the yid's chometz. Then that would be mekano lahabo goyva like Rava. So the Gemara said. Well, that's the point. What we're talking about is that the goy used his chametz as collateral he put a shibud on the chametz. So now after Pesach, so now when the loan comes due before Pesach or after Pesach, depending on the different rishonim, whatever. And the point is he didn't pay. So now the yid is able to take the chametz. So now if we say the mafreya hu goyva, then it means already as of when he lent him the money, which is before Pesach, then the chometz is considered retroactively to belong to him, like Abaya says. Therefore, the mayor following that would say that the chometz is also, because chometz shavol a Pesach. Whereas Rava would be going like the Tanakama, that it's mutter because during Pesach itself it still belonged to the goy. Only after Pesach, when the yid goes and collects the chametz from the goy, only then does it become his. Because the goy missed the payment because the goy couldn't pay. The goy borrowed money from the yid. We're talking about Yisrael shehilvel and nachri al chametz. The yid lent the goy money on the goy's chametz. That's what we're talking about. Yeah. So. Therefore, it seems that the machlokas Abaya and Rava is the same as the machlokas of the Tanakama and Reb Meir. The Gemara says v'tisbara. How could you think that that's the meaning of the machlokas? Amos sefer. Look at the next part of the brisa. Avol nachri shehu v'li Yisrael al chametzoi. But if it's the other way around, which is the case you thought we're talking about, that a goy lent money to a Jew using the Jew's chametz as collateral, la'achar pesach divrei hakol over. Then after Pesach, everybody would agree that he's over. If it's a matter of Lahabba and Lamafreya, then in the second case also, you should have the same machlokas Reb Meir and the Chachamim, whether it's also or not. You would have to have the machlokas in this case would be exactly the opposite of the first one. Lamanda Amahosim ain't over. The Tanakama there who said that you're not over in the first case. Because we would say mikano lahabo who goiva, and therefore during Pesach it didn't belong to the yid, it only belonged to him when he collected it after Pesach. So now in the second case, hacha over, then you would have to say here he's over because you have the other way around. The chometz doesn't belong to the goy till after Pesach. During Pesach it still belonged to the yid, the loiva. And Lamando Amahotsum over, Hocha and over, and vice versa. The fact that in the Sefer of the Braise, everybody agrees that he's over, if the goy was the one who lent the chametz to the yid, and the chametz originally belonged to the yid, and now the goy is going to eventually collect it, that shows it's not a matter, they're not arguing on the Mafreya and Lahabo. So it's not the same machlok as the Abaya and Rabba. They're arguing on some other point. Ela hocha ma'askinan. So what are we talking about? Both cases of the Braisa are talking about kigun shehir hinoi etzli, where again, it's not just that he said the chometz is collateral. He actually put it in the other guy's house. In other words, that it became a mashkin. So both cases are talking about that. So if it was not a mashkin, then for sure we would say mikanu la'bo goiva, like Rava says. But because he made it a mashkin, therefore the kamiflugi b'dirab Yitzchak. What it is the Tanakama and Reb Meir are going to be arguing within what Reb Yitzchak says. The Amr Reb Yitzchak, minayin l'bal choiv shekoyin mashkin. How do we know that the bal choiv acquires the mashkin? Now, in other words, what would that mean? It would mean, for example, that so Rashi says that actually that he's considered like a shoyl. He's considered like a shoyl. In effect, he would be chayev for anything that happened to that mashkin. For example, the case in Hamafkid. So we may remember it from when we were learning in Yeshiva that you have the case over there, Sela Hovisani Alav Sela Hayashava, Sela Hovisani Alav Shekel Hayashava, where you have an argument between the Malva and the Loiva, how much was the loan versus how much was the value of the Mashkin, where the point is, if the Mashkin was lost or stolen or nenas or whatever, then you take away, you subtract the value of the Mashkin from the value of the debt. And he only owes if there was anything left over, then the loiva pays that. If not, then the malva may even have to reimburse the loiva extra. So what we say, so this is what Rabbi Yitzchak is saying. But well, in that particular case in Hamafkid, I think the lashon over there is Ovad Hamashkin, which Ovad could be Gneva Vaveda. Rashi over here learns that it means that he's chayev even for Oinsim. He's more than a Shema Chinam, more than a Shema Sacher. He's in effect like a Shoyel. He's chayev for everything, even Oinsim, because it's considered his. He's koine. So just like when you koine something, you're not going to say, well, there was an onus. The fact is you put money, you put down money for it, you own it, and it's yours for all purposes. That's what we're going to see. Well, he buys it in effect by getting it as a mashkin for his alva. But we're going to see how we learn that. One second. First of all, actually, Tosfos first of all disagrees with Rashi and says that no, he's really only a shomer socher, so he's not chayev b'onsin. He'd be chayev for gneva v'aveda and pshia, of course, but not for onsin. Also, Tosfos asks, based on a Gemara elsewhere in Bava Metzia, that seems to say that there's a difference between two different kinds of mashkin. There's a mashkin that a person takes bishas halva, when I'm lending you money, and right now I want you to give me a mashkin as collateral for it. And then there's a kind where you weren't able to pay up, and eventually what I'm doing therefore is taking a mashkin from you in order to force you to pay up. You have, for example, there's the din in the Torah that you're not allowed to go into the guy's house and take a mashkin. He has to bring it out to you, and if he's a poor person, you have to return the clothing to him every night, or if it's day clothing, then every day, etc. So the Gemara talks about that primarily refers to a mashkin shaloi b'shas alva. B'shas alva, you can do whatever you want. So now over here, we're talking b'shas alva, because we're talking about that to begin with, when the goy borrowed the money from the yid, or vice versa, you're taking a mashkin. So Tosfos learns that, okay, since he's koine, since shaloi b'shas alva, he's completely koine. So even over here, it's b'shas alva, to a certain extent, we can consider it to be his, to the extent that he's over on bal yirah bal yimotze. B'shas alva, you can have two kinds of mashkin. You can have, Reuven is lending Shimon money, and Reuven says, I'm only going to lend you this money only if you can give me some object that's worth a certain amount, so that if you don't pay back, then I have that mashkin available to get back payment from. Or you can have, where Reuven lends the money to Shimon without any conditions like that. There's the regular shibud that you have with any other kind of halva, but that's it. Later on, Shimon defaults on the loan, and so Reuven sends a shliach beistin into, so Reuven goes to beistin, and they send a shliach beistin can't go into the house, whatever. Shimon comes out of his house bringing something that he gives to the shliach beistin to give to Reuven, which therefore will be used as a mashkin, that now it'll kind of force him, how am I going to be able to manage without this thing? So therefore, eventually he'll pay off the debt. Actually, the truth is, the Gemara talks about in Bava Metzia, given that Reuven has to return it to Shimon every night or every day, so what is the mashkin really accomplishing? One thing the mashkin accomplishes is, again, that, like we said before, if Reuven dies, if the loiva dies, then Shimon will still be able to keep the mashkin, because again, like we said on Amud Aleph, Tofus Michayim, he had it in his possession while Reuven was alive, so he's now entitled to keep it. Well, yeah. Another thing is also it makes it that it's a loan that can't be canceled by Shmita. A regular loan would be canceled by Shmita, but when there's a mashkin involved, then not. Anyway, the point is, so Tosfos wants to say that really we're only bringing in Rabbi Yitzchok's din as sort of a side thing over here. Since when it's Shaloi B'Shas Alva, he's koneh it completely based on the pasuk that we're going to quote in a minute. Therefore, even B'Shas Alva, he has a certain limited ownership over it to the extent that he can be over on Bal Yirah by Imatzeh. The Ran disagrees. He says that actually Rabbi Yitzchok's din would apply fully to either kind of mashkin. The Gemara in Bav Metzia that Tosis is referring to is only a dichui. It's not really the accepted thing lahalacha. Anyway, de'amar Rabbi Yitzchok, minayin lebal chayv shekoyne mashkin. How do we know that the bal chayv is acquiring the mashkin for all purposes according to Rashi, like a shomer sachar according to Tosfos? Shenema ulachati yitzdaka, because the pasuk says in this case when you have to return the mashkin every day or every night, the pasuk says it will be for you tzedaka. So imenay koyne mashkin tzedaka minayin. If you haven't acquired the mashkin, how can you call it tzedaka? You're giving back the person what he himself owns. Ela mikan lebal chayv shekoyne mashkin. So from here you see he actually acquires it. And now, when he's giving it back to the guy every day or every night, then he's doing a tzedakah, he's doing a chesed. Famous thing from that we say, al derech that is also when the Eibishter returns us our neshama every morning is also following this thing by rights. The neshama is chelek alakami mal, and by rights the Eibishter could keep it by him, because after all he owns it. In any case, not necessarily if we acted as we need to, but the Eibishter does a tzedakah and does a chesed every morning and returns it to us like this over here. Anyway, so what's the machlokes therefore? Tanakama sover hani mili yisrael misrael. This only applies when a Yid borrows from a Yid who dekorina be lachati etzdaka. That's when this pasuk lachati etzdaka applies, because that's when you have the mitzvah to return the mashkin every night or every day. But the Tanakama would say that if a Yid is borrowing money from a goy, then that concept doesn't apply. That concept of koin and mashkin, or rather the other way around, if a yid lends money to a goy and takes a mashkin from a goy, then that concept doesn't apply. So therefore he's not over on it, It's avolat aroya shalachedem mishogavaya. Therefore the chometz still belongs to the goy during Pesach, and therefore there's no problem. Even though the yid has it in his house, doesn't matter because he wasn't actually koine it. But no, because as long as he hasn't accepted achrayus, and if he accepted achrayus for it, that's something else. We learned in the first parak, then he's also to have it around. But here we're talking about he didn't accept any achrayus for it, so it's not considered his. The yid lent the goy money. The goy gave him chametz, put the chametz in the yid's house as a mashkin, and we're saying that because mikanul abahu goyva, during Pesach itself, the mashkin still belongs to the goy. The yid hasn't acquired it on the grounds of a lachati etzdaka, because that only applies between Jews. Therefore, it would be mutter. But a mayor sover kavachomer, whereas your mayor would say it's a kavachomer. Yisrael, koni. If a yid is acquiring the mashkin even from another yid, and then we're saying that he's koina. Yisrael mi nochri lekosh again. How much more so that a yid is acquiring a goy's mashkin? So therefore, yes, it would be his during Pesach. He is koina mashkin, and therefore during Pesach it's his, and therefore it's also. The kavachomer, but pashtus would be that the Torah is more careful about the money of a yid, and still we see that the Torah is taking it away from the loiva and giving it to the malva, just that the malva now has a chiyuv to return it every night or every day. How much more so in the case of a goy? The chametz therefore is considered. Reb Meir would say the yid is considered to be the owner of this mashkin of chametz. Well, as the owner, then it's chametz shavah l'va Pesach. It because the minayin lebal chayv shekoyne mashkin. Reb Yitzchak told us that the bal chayv is koyne a mashkin. Reb Meir would say that applies even when a goy borrowed money from a yid and gave him a mashkin. So the mashkin, which is the chametz, becomes the yid, and therefore, yeah. Aval nochri shehilva Yisrael al chametzai. But if the goy lent money to the yid on the yid's chametz after Pesach, divra hakol over, then for sure after Pesach he's over. Hasam vade nochri Yisrael lekani. There's no question that the goy doesn't acquire the mashkin from the yid. The whole gzeiras akosiv that the bal chayv is kind of mashkin is only going to apply when the bal chayv is a yid, not when it's a goy. So therefore, we're going, that's why the Sefer of the Braisa says everybody agrees it's going to be Osir, because it's still considered the Yid's Chometz, because Mikano La Bohu Goyva, the Goy is only considered to be the owner of the Chometz once he actually collects it from the Yid, and that takes place only after Pesach. During Pesach, therefore, the Chometz, even though it was in the Goy's house, but it belonged to the Yid all this time, therefore it's Chometz Rav Alav Pesach. So when we sell Chometz, that's a different matter. You're selling it, the Goy is giving you a down payment, and you're saying at the end of Pesach, either you pay off the rest, or you sell me back the Chometz. So fine, during Pesach, the chametz itself belongs to the goy. The down payment is, we talked about the other day in the Sunday morning shiur, that the Alter Rebbe worked out the problem that you don't have ayov v'nafik azuzi because you have the order of Kabbalon involved. So therefore, the yid is guaranteed to get his money regardless from because he can get from the order of Kabbalon. The other guy is a yid, but that doesn't matter. He's not the owner of the chametz, so that works. But meanwhile, what you do is you do various kinds of kinyonim with the goy, because you have different opinions among rishonim and achronim what methods of kinyon are valid for a goy. So you have him do several different ones, and therefore you make it work. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says Tanan. Let's look at our Mishnah again. We said Nachri Shehil v'Yisrael l'chametz. So if a goy lent money to a yid, using his chametz, using the yids, and the yid used his chametz as collateral. Acher Pesach muter b'hana. So we're saying that after Pesach, that chametz is muter b'hana. So let's see. Nihi nami dehirhina yetzloi. So how does it help if the yid place the chametz by the goy's house? Ha'amet nocher miyisrael loykoni. Didn't we just say that the goy is not acquiring the mashkin from the yid? So shouldn't it be chametz shavol of a Pesach? Because it is the yid's chametz, and it's in, even though it's in the goy's property. The answer is like kasha hodo amalei me'achshav hodo amalei amalei me'achshav. There's a difference. The Mishnah is talking about not only that he put it in the goy's house, but he said if I don't pay you by such and such a date, it will be yours me'achshav. So therefore, so now me'achshav, as of the time of the loan, then it's considered to be in the reshus of the goy. Whereas the Braisa is talking about there was no me'achshav. So therefore, so we only say mikano la'abohu goyva, like Rava said. We didn't mention Me'achshav. Okay, whatever. So the Gemara says, "When we're not tamer the shani le ben heicha d'ama Me'achshav or ben heicha d'loyama Me'achshav." Where do you see that there's such a distinction between saying Me'achshav and not? So D'tanya, we learn in a brisa, "Nachri shehirhin pas puni etz Yisrael." If a goy used as a mashkun for a debt, a pas puni. Puni, Rashi describes as a large oven like the kinds that we have nowadays. In other words, the kind of ovens they had in those days were smallish. They were shaped like an upside down cup, kind of, and you had to stick the bread to the side of the oven. So how big already could he make a loaf of bread? You couldn't make a loaf of bread like the size of the chalas we have nowadays, let alone the gigantic chalas that they had by Simchas or whatever, it would fall off. So necessarily, you're only making small and fairly flat loaves of bread. But if you have a puni, which is an oven shaped like the ones we have nowadays, where it has a bottom and it has sides and whatever, then you can bake a large loaf of bread in there. So usually, what would you use in a mashkin? You're not going to use a tiny loaf of bread. You're going to use a large chosh of a loaf. Therefore, that's what we're saying, pas puni. The word puni, by the way, is actually distantly related to the word furnace in English. They both come from a Latin word that means an oven. Yeah. Anyway, so Nachri Shehirin Pas Purni Eitz Yisrael. So if a goy does that, he takes a Pas Purni and gives it as collateral to the Yid. Einoy Over. So he's not over, and here we're talking over on Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotze, because we're saying the Yid is not koine the Mashkin from the goy, like we said before, like we said, the Tanakama says that only a Yid acquires the Mashkin from another Yid, but not a Yid from a goy. The im omalai he got ticha, but if the goy tells the yid he got ticha, it reached you. In other words, which amounts to saying me'achshav. If I don't pay you by such and such a date, then he got ticha. Then as of now, this loaf of bread reached you and is considered yours. So then over. So then he's over. Maishna reisha, maishna sefer, ela lav shma mina. So we see that's the distinction. Therefore. That's the difference. When he says he got ticha, is another way of saying me'achshav. So therefore, in the first case, he's not over because he didn't say me'achshav. Therefore, the yid only owns the. Therefore, if we say the yid is not koine the mashkin from the goy, then he's only koine it after Pesach, and therefore there's no problem. But if he says he got ticha, then he would be koine it, and therefore there is a problem. Shema mino, so that proves it. Okay, so the Gemara finishes off. Tanan Rabbanan. By the way, Tosfos over here throughout the sugya talks about, so how would Abaye explain these various things? With this last one, Tosfos says that Abaye would have to say the Reisha is talking about where the goy actually ended up paying off the debt and getting back his loaf of bread. And the Sefer would be when he says he got ticha, amounts to saying, you know what, forget about it. I don't plan to pay off the loan, so just keep the bread to begin with. So not a matter of me'achshav versus not. Just once he says I don't plan to pay it, then therefore that amounts to l'mafreya who goyva. Yeah, maybe. Well, I don't know. Between one yid and another, I don't know. That wouldn't work because one of them is going to be overrun by Yerubal Yematzah. Yeah. Okay. Turn it up on him. Chanus show Yisrael and Malai show Yisrael. Suppose you have a store that belongs to a yid, and the stock in the store, the bread and wine that are sold in the store, also belongs to Yisrael. And you have goyish workers going into that store. So then, chametz shenimtsa sham achra Pesach osabana. So if you find chametz in that store after Pesach, then it's osabana. It probably came from the stock, and therefore it belonged to a yid, and he didn't clean it out of the store before Pesach or sell it to the goy or whatever. Therefore, it'd be osir. And the other way around, ve'ein sar chlema ba'achila. Needless to say, it would be osir ba'achila because it would be chametz sh'avar l'av Pesach. On the other hand, chanus shal nachri or malai shal nachri, if it's the other way around, a goy's store, a goy's stock, or poyli yisrael nechnasim v'yotzim l'sham, and Jewish workers are going in and out, then chametz shenimtsa sham achar Pesach, mutar b'achila, then the chametz that you find in it after Pesach, you can assume came from the store's stock and belonged to the goy, therefore it's mutar to eat, v'ein sarach lami b'hana, needless to say b'hana. It's not necessarily a given, and in fact, Rabbeinu Chananel has a different girsa, that's the other way around. That you go according to who the workers are, because if it's a yid store, you can assume that he cleaned out the store before Pesach. So therefore, what are you doing finding chametz there? There's a much higher likelihood that the chametz came from the goyish workers. So therefore, it can be mutter. Whereas the other way around, if it's a goy's store, a goy doesn't clean out his store before Pesach. So there's a much higher likelihood that there's a good chance that the chametz actually came from the Jewish workers that dropped it over there before Pesach, and therefore and it belonged to them. They weren't miyayish of it or whatever, and therefore the Bach talks about that maybe Rashi and Rabbi Chananel are not even arguing la'alocha. Maybe it depends whether the store sells chametz or not. Be that as it may, it's interesting that the Rif and the Rambam don't even bring this whole din. It is brought in Shulchan Aruch though. One reason is, as one of the Mefarshim says, maybe the reason why the Rif didn't choose to bring it in the Rambam is because since we have these different Girsais, what it should be exactly, so they figured it'd be more confusing than it's worth to even mention it. We just know chametz that belongs to a yid over Pesach is also b'ana, and chametz that belongs to a goy over Pesach is mutar b'ana. So they didn't want to bother getting into the nitty gritty of the details where you're going to have to distinguish between what the store is selling and what it's not selling, etc. Mishnah says, chametz shenafla olav mapolas, if a wall collapsed on top of chametz, hareyo kumavur, then that chametz is considered as though it was destroyed. Therefore, you don't have to do anything. You can just be mevatel it, and that's that. Rav Shimon Gamliel lema, kol she'en akel av yochel achapas achrav. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, only if it's buried so deeply that a dog can't search out of that. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chista, v'tzarech she'ivata b'libay, he does have to be mevatel in his heart, because otherwise the pile might be cleared away during Chol HaMoed, and then you have chametz in your possession. In fact, since we're saying you need to be mevatel, the Magen Avraham says an interesting thing based on that. So what if you weren't mevatel it before the time, before 6 hours of the day, then you're actually going to be obligated to clear away the rocks and get rid of the chametz. Because now you can't be mevatel it anymore. It's not in your rishus. Yeah. Doesn't matter. No, it's someplace in your property. Yeah. Okay. Tana, we learn in a braisa, kama chafisas hakelev, what's considered the amount that a dog can search for it, shloisha tefachim, if it's buried up to 3 tefachim deep. So therefore, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, that's telling us, and the halacha is like him, because he's not really arguing with the Tanakhama, he's just clarifying that it has to be buried at least 3 tefachim deep. So Gemara mentions, by the way, omelet of acha bread of Yosef Lodavashi. He was a similar din. Hoda Amar Shmuel. Now Shmuel tells us in Bava Metzia in Hamafkid, Safim Ein Lahem Shmira Ela Bekarka. The only valid way to be guarding over money is to bury it in the ground. So for example, if you give money to a shomer, whether shomer chinam, shomer sachar, or whatever, then he's obligated to bury it in the ground, and if not, then he's chayev for anything that happens to it, because it's considered pshia. Yeah, so mi ba'in and shloisha tfachim eloi. Does it have to be buried three tfachim deep or not? Amalei, Sar of Ashi answers, the difference is hachamishim recha. Here it's the matter of the smell. The dog can smell the chametz, and therefore ba'in and shloisha tfachim. So we need it to be covered by three tfachim of dirt or rubble in order that the smell of it won't reach the dog. Hachamishim echsuya me'enahu. Over there, all you need is it to be hidden from the eye so that ganavim don't come and take it. So you don't need three tvachim. V'kama, so how much do you need? Omer Raf from Bapapa from Sichra. So Raf from Bapapa from Sichra, which is the name of a place, says tefach, you need it to be one tefach deep, but no more than that. You buried it one tefach deep, then already you've accomplished what you need to as far as shmira, and now you're not chayiv if you're shem chinam, you're not you're only chayiv for pshia. If you're shem sachar, you're chayiv for gneiva v'aveda, etc. But you're not chayiv. You're not chayiv in that case, as opposed to if you hadn't buried it, then you'd be chayiv no matter what happens to it, because it would be pshia. But in the case of chametz, again, you need three tefachim, because there the point is in order that the dog won't sniff it out and uncover it. Yeah. Okay.